for Baha'is right now is the 12-day major festival of Rizwan, a name after a garden in Baghdad where their exiled leader Baha'u'llah declared himself their prophet for the modern age. Welcome to this, the second episode of two, looking into the spirituality and the experiences of the Baha'is. And this is The Good Life with me, Noel Devian, on ABC Radio and on your pod. We spoke last week with local Baha'is Michael Day and Venus Khalesi, and we were joined a little later by Safa Rahbar, who sang a prayer for us in the temple grounds.
Oh God, guide me, protect me, make of me a shining lamp.
That's Safa Rahbar there. You'll hear a little more of her at the end of this episode. Well, Venus and Michael and I talked about last week when Baha'is first acclaimed the new prophet back in 1863. The local Shi'at Muslim community in Iran were not at all happy. Local Muslims certainly didn't like the idea of a new prophet. The initial difficulty between the Muslim majority and the Baha'i minority in Iran has not eased up, and the Baha'is remain persecuted in the nation where they were originally based. Iranian Baha'is have been murdered, they've been imprisoned, they've been denied jobs, they've been denied places in universities, and many have simply emigrated to places like Australia and America to escape persecution. The seven present Iranian leaders of the Baha'is have been in jail for just on 5 years now. And I asked Venus Khalesi to continue our conversation from last week to tell us a little bit more about how the Australian Baha'i community, how it has been trying to help these prisoners of conscience in Iran.
What I can explain is the efforts that have been taken worldwide. These have included the UN General Assembly, for example. The Australian government has year after year co-sponsored resolutions condemning the actions of the Iranian government. In 2012, at the House of Representatives, we had a bipartisan motion which really brought the Iranian government to account and asked for a judicial review of the situation of the seven imprisoned Baha'is, the Baha'i leaders. And this May, we'll be holding a national forum at New South Wales Parliament House calling for their release. These family members who've been mentioned will be speaking about their relatives, and there will be members of religious communities praying for these religious leaders. So efforts are being taken, and we ask that people continue to advocate on behalf of the seven imprisoned and for the situation of human rights in Iran.
I can't help feeling a certain, weirdness about the situation, that a group which grew out of Shia Islam in Persia more than 100 years ago, which advocates equality of men and women and the unity of world religions and humanity, seems to be the object of a lot of anger and, in fact, a lot of very hateful activity by the Iranian government.
Unfortunately, that does seem to be the case, and we've had documented examples. There's been government documents which have been leaked. One includes this 1991 secret memorandum, which is essentially a blueprint to block the progress of the Baha'i community in Iran. And what's also happening is that there is a campaign of misinformation. So Iranian citizens are exposed to blatant lies, and Baha'is have become the scapegoats of the Iranian government in the media. So the Iranian community broadly becomes a victim of this campaign of misunderstanding that's happened.
Universal peace, unity of all humankind, you know, world religions all being... They're all huge ideas, you know. They're enormous ideas. But what practically does the Baha'i community do in Australia to try to effect any of this or make it happen?
On a practical scale, I mean, Baha'i individuals are working and taking steps in the local area through many ways. Baha'is open their homes or their Baha'i centres to host devotional gatherings and invite people of different beliefs and backgrounds to come together in a devotional atmosphere to pray. Baha'is offer spiritual and moral education classes to children in the neighbourhood. There's also opportunities to come together and study and build capacity for service.
Building capacities for service, could you decode that for me?
So I think on a practical level, Baha'is in neighbourhoods and communities all over the world, and especially in Australia, are striving to learn how to build capacity in individuals to be able to contribute to their communities in a meaningful way, be able to take care of their own needs, whether it's socially, intellectually, spiritually, and really when we go back to this idea of human rights, enable people to be able to take care of their own selves, but then also to let their communities advance. Right now, many Baha'i communities are focusing on working with the young, so working with the education of children and working with the youth, seeing them as the future generation.
I suppose I'm looking for really concrete examples, like a Baha'i teacher comes to the school and teaches scripture. That's an example. So could you give me some examples like that?
So there's some activities that the Baha'i communities are involved in. So I know in many communities in Sydney, there are classes that are offered for children in neighborhoods. And so they're taught to help children think, act, and reflect on spiritual principles like generosity, love, and really apply these truths to their daily lives. So it may be learning how to treat each other with kindness, listen to their parents more, to be able to get along with their siblings and not fight so much. These are some of, I guess, the feedback that you may hear from parents when they're trying to help their children when they're going through these classes.
I have a cousin, for example, who has little kids, and when she was trying to work out which scripture she'd let them go to, she said, oh, look, you know, they can go to Baha'i, I think, because they treat everybody fairly. Now, that's not bad, and this is, my cousin's quite smart. She's making a judgment about Baha'is not being, how would I put it, extremist, not being difficult. And it strikes me that when I've come across Baha'is, this is quite the case. You're probably the most passionate one I've met so far.
Baha'is are very passionate about their beliefs, very much dedicated to, you know, a posture of service to their community. And so really it's about building communities that have a posture of positive learning and working with others, whether or not they be Baha'is of whatever religious belief or background, to really help towards the positive construction of their communities.
So you're talking about there's a service mentality, but it strikes me that the Baha'is have a little bit in common with things like Esperanto, that these ideas of the late 19th century about a unified world were quite important, and the Baha'is seem to have taken up within religion.
Yeah, I mean, at the time when Baha'u'llah came, his teachings have inspired Baha'is to, I mean, I don't want to, you know, act locally, think globally, but we see ourselves as part of, as world citizens. You know, it doesn't matter what country we're from, what our background is. We really want to work together and overcome any form of national prejudice or religious prejudice and build communities that are peaceful and harmonious.
What got you all across the line? How did you end up a Baha'i?
I became a Baha'i after I'd been travelling, particularly in Asia and elsewhere, and I could feel intuitively that the foundations of the religions that I saw, there seemed to be a chord of similarity. And it was when I encountered the Baha'is who gave that explanation of the historical progress of divine messengers, that over certain periods of time throughout history, a divine messenger would come and would reinforce the message of the one who had come before him, but would also bring new spiritual teachings for the age. You see, we see these divine messengers not as God, but as perfect reflections. Say if you could think of God as the sun and these prophets as a mirror, and these prophets mirror the attributes of God. And that's what really attracted me.
It seems to me that in that thinking, Christians are taught that Christ is the only mediator and advocate. It's quite exclusive. Muslims are taught that Muhammad is the prophet of God. How do you make sense of those competing prophets?
Well, we don't see them as competing. We see their statements that other people have interpreted in other ways as more being that when they say, I am the way to God, for instance, they're talking about I am the way to God for that particular historical period. And so, for instance, when Jesus said that, we believe that he was the divine messenger for that age. And similarly, we see the other prophets for that age. And for this age, we see that Baha'u'llah has brought the vision of global society that we, everybody, all of us, can see happening before our eyes. And he's given us principles that can enable this global society to develop in an ordered, productive and peaceful way.
Well, what do you say to people who sincerely believe, Muslims who sincerely believe, Muhammad is the prophet of God and that's it? Or Christians who say, no, Jesus Christ is our only mediator and advocate with the Father. Or Jews who say, look, the prophets of God are already here in the Hebrew Testament. That's where they are. What do you say to them?
You know, I think I would approach this personally, from a human rights perspective, every individual has the right to have their own freedom of belief. If that is sincerely their view, if that's what they hold and they do not wish to recognize a prophet after Jesus or Muhammad, then that's something that each individual should respect. And if that's something that they hold dear to their heart, then that's something that I will respect. But it's not something for one to impose on another or for a government to impose on another. And I think that's when you cross the line, when you're there to systematically impose a belief, a religious belief, and not respect that of another human being.
I would say that everybody has to make their own decision, and that when people make a decision to recognise a prophet of God, whether it be Jesus, Muhammad or whatever, and follow their teachings, that's a good thing. Because the teachings of Jesus and Muhammad gave guidance on a personal level where one should love one another, treat poor people with kindness, be honest. The golden rules, they exist in all religions. And if people are following the teachings of the prophets, that's a good thing. If they asked about the Baha'i Faith, I would just say, just go and read the Baha'i writings, and it's up to you whether you find what you think is good for you and useful for you and enlightening to you in the Baha'i writings. They're available for everybody to read, and that's what I would suggest, and it's up to them then to make their decision.
Do you not have a drive within you to convince other people that the Baha'i teaching has something to offer them too?
Of course. I mean, I'd love to share my faith with those who I serve with or see, and if I'm able to share the teachings of the Baha'i Faith with others through my daily conversations and interactions, of course that brings, you know, joy to my heart, and it's something, you know, that I enjoy to do through conversations. But it's not for me to impose my beliefs on someone else. And also Baha'u'llah teaches, as part of the principles of the Baha'i Faith, independent investigation of truth, and that each individual, it is the responsibility of each individual to find out truth and seek truth for themselves.
Now, Venus mentioned devotion, and part of what we're going to do is we're going to go into the temple and hear some of the singing that you might do. Can you tell us what you're going to sing for us and where it would belong?
Sure. What I'm going to sing is a Baha'i prayer, and the words of the prayer are, O God, guide me, protect me, make of me a shining lamp and a brilliant star. This is a prayer that can be said by anyone, but it's often actually sang in children's classes. Sometimes one of the first prayers that a child may learn, and they can say it whenever they like, but I think especially at times where they would like guidance, when they would like to just pray and increase their capacity to be able to have a good day or to, yeah, I think many different uses for the prayer.
Oh God, guide me. Protect me, make of me a shining lamp and a brilliant star. O God, guide me, protect me, make of me a shining lamp and a brilliant star. Thou art the mighty and the powerful. Thou art the mighty and the powerful.